Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming. The Secretary General will start with some introductory remarks, and then, as usual, he'll be happy to take your questions. Secretary General.
Good afternoon. Today I would like to talk not just about NATO, but about NATO and the European Union, and about what we Europeans can and should do to ensure that Europe is a powerful global actor, not a global spectator. Later today, I will go to the European Parliament to address a joint meeting of the Committee on Foreign Affairs and Subcommittee on Security and Defence, together with the chairpersons of Defence and Foreign Affairs Committees of national parliaments. L'une de mes priorités en tant que secrétaire général est de renforcer les relations avec l'Union européenne. Je dialogue donc activement avec nos collègues de ce côté-ci de Bruxelles, parce que l'OTAN et l'Union européenne sont des partenaires stratégiques. La sécurité européenne ne peut pas et ne doit pas être limitée à un cadre unique. Depuis plus de 60 ans, nous voyons que la sécurité de l'Europe dépend de l'action de l'OTAN comme de l'Union européenne. Nous n'avons qu'à regarder en Afrique du Nord et au Moyen-Orient pour voir que nous sommes confrontés à un environnement de sécurité internationale de plus en plus complexe et exigeant. À l'avenir, nous devons donc faire davantage ensemble, sûrement pas moins. Nous devons rester déterminés et aptes à relever les défis de sécurité auxquels nous sommes confrontés collectivement. Nous devons tirer des enseignements de nos opérations, qu'elles soient menées sous commandement OTAN, européen ou national, en Afghanistan, en Libye et au Mali. We all know those lessons. European nations still don't have enough of the capabilities that are key to modern missions and operations. Transport planes, air-to-air refueling, and intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance assets. We are making some progress, but we need to go further. All our nations face declining defense budgets, so we can only be effective if we work together and coordinate our efforts. This is not a competition. We are complementary. And there is ample scope for cooperation between our two organizations. NATO and the European Union have already shown how effectively we can work together to bring freedom and security to our continent. In Central and Eastern Europe, and in the Balkans, NATO has shown its capacity to act quickly and in high-intensity crises, while the European Union is able to deploy a wide range of civilian and military expertise to help rebuild nations. The most recent example is Kosovo. NATO has ensured a safe and secure environment for over a decade, allowing the European Union to use its diplomatic and economic tools to consolidate institutions and the local economy. I welcomed the historic agreement reached between Belgrade and Pristina. I commended Cathy Ashton when she came to NATO headquarters the very same day, together with Mr. Dacic and Mr. Thaci. They both made clear that as they work for the implementation of the agreement, they see NATO as the guarantor of peace and security for all the people of Kosovo. It has been a long and difficult process. NATO and KFOR have supported the European Union's efforts from the very beginning and all along the way. We have seen over the years that close cooperation between NATO and the European Union here in Brussels, as well as on the ground, has produced tangible progress. NATO's commitment to support the implementation of the agreement remains key for success, and I hope it will soon translate into further improvements of the security situation on the ground in northern Kosovo. This agreement represents a big step forward for regional peace and security, and it should give new momentum to our shared vision, the Euro-Atlantic integration of the Western Balkans. So NATO and the European Union have to be more ambitious to complement and reinforce each other. We must seize the opportunity of December's European Council meeting to do just that. In December, European leaders will focus on security and defense for the first time since the start of the financial crisis. I hope they will take clear steps towards a Europe that is both able to act and willing to act. I also hope they will encourage the European Union and NATO to coordinate and cooperate more. Security is a team effort. The agreement between Belgrade and Pristina shows that NATO and the European Union can work together and must work together for our common security. And I'm confident that we will. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
And we'll go to Kuna over here.
Nawab Khan from the Kuwait News Agency. So I would like to ask a question on the recent developments in Syria. There have been reports of two Israeli strikes in recent days in Syria, and also reports on the use of chemical weapons. So I would like to ask your comments on these developments. Are you concerned that the conflict is now spreading? Thank you.
First, on Israeli strikes, I am aware of the press reports. I have no indication of such activity in the area relevant to the deployment of NATO patriots. Of course, NATO allies continue to monitor developments closely. As you know, we are focused on our defensive deployment to protect the population and territory of Turkey. As regards chemical weapons, yes, we do have indications that chemical weapons may have been used. However, we don't have consolidated information as regards more detailed circumstances, including who have actually used chemical weapons. But of course, these developments remain of grave concern and emphasizes how urgent it is that the international community should redouble its efforts to find a political solution to this crisis so that we can see an end to the bloodshed and the start of a general transition that accommodates the legitimate aspirations of the Syrian people.
NPR.
Thank you. Terry Schultz with National Public Radio and CBS News. Mr. Secretary General, even if you don't have yet consolidated or firm evidence of who is using the chemical weapons, how much more does it concern you to hear that the opposition, the sort of side of the war that most of the world would be supporting, may have been the ones to use sarin gas in this instance? Doesn't this just raise the stakes that much higher, that perhaps both sides are in possession and willingness to use these weapons?
Let me emphasize once again, we do not have confirmed and consolidated information as to who might have used chemical weapons. But I would like to stress that any use of chemical weapons, whoever might have used chemical weapons, any such use is a breach of international law, and of course a matter of grave concern. So we remain concerned about the situation in Syria, and we urge the international community to redouble its efforts to find a political solution.
Al-Arabiya.
Mr. Secretary General, I'm here, back in the room. Nordin Farid from Al-Arabiya News Channel. The Israeli official almost recognized that they bombed in two times Syria in these 2 or 3 days. I would like to ask you if you are seriously concerned about the more and more Israeli involvement in this internal conflict. And a question to the follow-up to the previous question. Madame Kayla Del Ponte, who is a member of the International Inquiry Committee, said that she saw reports suggesting that the opposition used the chemical weapons in last March incident. I would like to ask you, do you support this Israeli involvement in the Syrian internal conflict? What is your comment, like Madame Kayla Del Ponte, who is, let's say, a credible source? This is an international commission investigation member who is suggesting that she saw reports accusing the opposition. Thank you.
As regards the Israeli strikes, as I said, I'm aware of the press reports, but I don't have further information. We remain concerned about the situation in and around Syria. It's not a new concern that for quite some time we have expressed concerns about the risk of a spillover of this conflict. So we remain concerned, as we have been for quite some time. And as regards chemical weapons, I don't know on which basis Kaladin Ponder has made her statements. What I would like to stress is that the possible use of chemical weapons is a breach of international law, whoever might have used chemical weapons. So also in that regard, we remain concerned. And I think the developments we have witnessed also recently just stress how important it is that we find a political solution sooner rather than later. And it is indeed a great responsibility for the international community to find a solution as soon as possible. And I really urge, and in particular I urge the permanent members of the UN Security Council to find each other, to reach an agreement, to send a strong and unified message to the regime in Damascus that time has come to initiate a transition that can lead to a political solution that accommodates the legitimate aspirations of the Syrian people. And I think we have a framework on which a political solution could be found. On the 30th of June 2012, the so-called Action Group on Syria published a declaration from their meeting in Geneva. The strength of that declaration is that it's signed by all five members of the UN Security Council. In my opinion, it should be possible to find a political solution within that framework.
We had Ritau and then.
Yes, Minaska of the Danish newspaper, the Danish news agency, Ritzau, in a recent interview with the Danish newspaper Politiken under the headline Mistakes in Iraq Hinder Military Intervention in Syria, you're talking about some of the experiences from Iraq. I would like you to elaborate a little bit on what you think those mistakes were, what you're learning from them, and how that makes you try to be more clear on defining the red lines in Syria.
Well, I hinted at the very fact that it's understandable that political leaders want clear evidence when it comes to the possession of and possible use of chemical weapons. Taking into account the experience from Iraq, I was asked about the indications that chemical weapons may have been used in Syria. I share the view that it is of utmost importance to get consolidated information, to get clear evidence. And this is also a reason why it is of utmost importance that United Nations inspectors get full and free access to Syria to investigate what has actually happened. And it's regrettable that so far the Syrian authorities have denied the United Nations such access.
James.
Yes, Brooke Senior, James Defense. Mr. Rasmussen, I have a question about the upcoming December Council. And your desire to work more closely together. But I have some problems. I mean, I don't see how, really, there's nothing the two can do officially other than issue political declarations, for one, and unofficially. The two sides are already informally coordinating their respective PNS and smart defense initiatives. The real challenge, really, to Europe's CSDP place in the world is its shrinking defense industrial base, low R&D spending, et cetera, et cetera. So, what is it the two sides can do together officially? I really don't see it. Please tell us. Thank you.
Yeah, but, I mean, to pick up on what you said, the answer is very clear. To invest more in defense, and I can preview what I'm going to tell parliamentarians later this afternoon. If Europeans are not willing to invest a sufficient amount of money in defense, then all talk about a strengthened European defense will just be hot air.
Reuters.
Adrian Croft from Reuters. Secretary General, on just following up from what you just said, in the French defense white paper last week, it calls for French spending on defense to fall to 1.5% of GDP in 2014. Do you think that this is setting a bad example that one of your largest, most powerful military members is cutting military spending to that extent?
As you know, we do not, as an alliance, interfere with national decisions on the level of defense spending. We do have alliance benchmarks, but we leave it to each individual nation to make her decision as regards the level of defense spending. Furthermore, it's also a question about how you spend your defense expenditure. And actually, France is an ally that has demonstrated not only military capability to deploy beyond French borders and participate in international, also take the lead of international military operations, but France has also demonstrated a political will to actually use her military capabilities. All in all, I welcome the French white paper. I have studied it. I have seen that France is strongly committed to working within NATO, strongly committed to the transatlantic defense alliance. I have also taken note of the fact that compared to previous plans, it seems that France will, so to speak, hold the line when it comes to defense investments. So I appreciate those strong commitments.
Le Monde.
Monsieur le secrétaire général, une question en français, vous pouvez répondre en anglais si vous le préférez, bien sûr. À propos de votre plaidoyer pour le rapprochement entre l'Union européenne et l'OTAN, est-ce que vous entrevoyez une solution politique au problème qui bloque cette collaboration depuis très longtemps, à savoir le problème de Chypre? Et deuxième question, ce plaidoyer, votre présence au Parlement européen, va sans doute renforcer la rumeur selon laquelle vous envisageriez une fonction, une haute fonction européenne à l'avenir. Est-ce que ça se place dans ce cadre-là?
First of all, as you know, to fundamentally solve the problems in the relationship between NATO and the European Union, we need a solution to the Cyprus problem. And I really urge all parties in Cyprus to move forward, find a solution, reunify the island. A lot is at stake, also economically, and I think both parts of the island would profit from a reunification. There are natural resources that could be exploited if they find each other. And on top of that, we could also move forward politically when it comes to the partnership between NATO and the European Union. And as regards future plans, I have my hands full. 100% occupied, so I haven't started to reflections on what next.
AP.
Mr. Secretary General, I'd like to just return to the question of the alleged Israeli strikes in Syria. It's hard to understand how NATO, a global military player, could have no idea whether Israel was responsible or not for these strikes. I wonder, has anyone at NATO, or you personally perhaps, been in touch with Israeli officials? Have they confirmed that they're responsible, denied it, or told you that it's none of your business?
I can just repeat what I said, that of course I'm aware of press reports on intelligence reports. We don't comment as a matter of principle, obviously. And as I also stated, we have no indications of such activity in the area relevant to the deployment of NATO patriots. And that's actually what I am able to say about that.
Have you been in touch with Israeli officials at all?
We don't comment on that.
Albanian media.
ABC News, on Serbian-Kosovo agreement. Just some days ago, the president of Kosovo said that NATO's role for the implementation of this agreement is more than necessary. What kind of guarantees NATO gives that this agreement will be properly implemented on the ground? Thank you.
I can assure you that we will do all we can to assist in the implementation of this political agreement. As I said in my introduction, we commend the European Union for facilitating this process. We also commend political leaders in both Belgrade and Pristina for their strong determination to find a political solution. What we have seen is that both parties consider NATO as an impartial guarantor of peace and stability. And the assurance we have given is that we will continue to fully implement the United Nations mandate, that is, to ensure a safe and secure environment and free movement for all people in Kosovo. And I'm very pleased to see that all parties involved trust NATO and KFOR and consider us an impartial guarantor of that peace and stability. And we will continue our work and help implementing this agreement.
Japanese media in the center.
Hi, my name is Takashi. I'm with NHK Japan Broadcasting Corporation. I'd like to come back to the topic of Syria. Now, you have repeatedly expressed concern about the spillover effect of the fighting inside of Syria. And it, obviously now it seems to be obvious that the, well, Israeli or other parties are involved, and it's obvious we have seen so many spillover effect. So do you think this Israel attack might be helpful to end the bloodshed in that country? And in that regard, are there any possibility that NATO may change the course to intervene militarily in that area?
There's no change of NATO's position. As I said, we remain concerned. We remain concerned about the humanitarian situation. It's, more than 70,000 people killed, more than 1 million refugees. It's outrageous what we are witnessing. We remain concerned about the risk of a regional spillover. We remain concerned about the risk of the use of chemical weapons. We consider it a responsibility for the whole of the international community to find a solution to this. NATO as an alliance is focused on the defense and protection of our allies, in this case, Turkey. And this is the reason why we have deployed the Patriot missiles. And I can assure you we have all plans in place to defend and protect Turkey against any kind of attack. That's our obligation as a military alliance to defend our member states and their populations. That's our focal point. But no reason to hide that we are deeply concerned about the situation and the development in Syria. And that's why we call on all parties and we call on the international community to find a political solution as soon as possible.
Last question, Bosnian media at the back, Ines.
It's Croatian and Montenegrin media now. Okay. I wonder, there were some renewed allegations recently in the international press that Croatia was selling arms to Syrian rebels. Do you have some knowledge on this, or do you have some comment on this? How would you, what do you know about this? And my second question is related to Kosovo. You said that NATO will do all you can in implementation of the agreement. But does it mean, did I understand correctly that it means that you are going to go on with your with everything which is under your mandate, or is it perhaps something else that you envisage? Thank you.
On Croatia and alleged armed delivery, I don't have any information and no comments. On Kosovo, we have a mandate. We will fully implement that mandate, and this is the assurance we have given the parties involved in the political agreement.
Thank you very much indeed.